Into the here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, but there's no hurry.
Sugar or no?
Sugar, yeah.
One or two?
Three. Indian tea means like that. No? What day is today? Something empty. Mm-hmm. the understanding of emptiness, shunyata, I think is best approached through three levels. Impermanence, interdependence, and then interdependence or dependent arising, and then emptiness, shunyata. So impermanence, I think it's very important to start with impermanence, because impermanence is something that's easy to understand. It's quite obvious, and also it's very important that we understand it and focus on, because it's something that is happening all the time, but we have the habit to ignore it completely. We all see it's happening. It's nothing hidden. It's nothing, you know, mystical. It's not something that you cannot find out. But we don't focus on it. We don't know. We kind of try to wish it away. We try to put it under the carpet. And because of that, we evade to face the reality of life. And that brings lots of problems, because we don't want to face the reality of our life and the reality of the nature of the world. So therefore, you know, impermanence would be the first thing that is emphasized. And in Buddhist tradition, actually, to meditate on impermanence is very important. It's regarded as one of the most important meditations. Buddha himself said that of all the meditations, the important, the most kind of most effective meditation would be on the meditation of impermanence. He said it in a kind of a funny way. He said that of all the footprints of all the animals and, you know, beings, which footprint do you think is the most significant and prominent, most impressive footprint? And people said elephants, because it's so big and its impression must be very deep. And he said that in the same way, if you ask of all the meditations, which meditation is the most kind of impressive, most significant, most kind of giving a lasting impression on yourself, he said it would be the meditation on impermanence. Because I think this is something which is totally happening all around us, and we ignore it. But if you go deeply into the impermanence, you will also find interdependence. You will also find emptiness. It's just a matter of subtlety. There was สร้างใบมิลาเลตา he said that I was afraid of death and I ran away into the caves and in the solitude I meditated, I reflected so much on the uncertainty of death that I realized the deathlessness. Now even if the death comes, I have no fear. Now this, what does that mean? You are afraid of death and then you meditate not on deathlessness but on the uncertainty of death. That's more, you know, that's impermanence. So everybody is sure to die, everything is sure to change, everything is actually changing all the time, and that's a fact. So when somebody, you know, when I'm looking at myself and so okay, I'm impermanent, when I'm changing, when I'm changing, am I changing within 1 year? Am I changing within 1 month? Am I changing within 1 day? Am I changing within 1 hour? When? There is no time. This is the time I'm changing. I'm changing every moment. Is there a time when I'm not changing? So this moment is gone, this moment is gone, this moment is gone, this moment is gone. And when is the time that things are not changing? So if you cannot find a time that things are not changing, so therefore it is changing all the time. So if things are changing all the time, when is it that the things are standing still and exist on its own? Because when something exists, it should not be in the process. Change is in the process. So when things are not changing, when you cannot find a moment that things are not changing, that means you don't find a thing that exists even for one moment. So if it is like that, if what I call myself, what I call anything else, is not existing one moment, always in a kind of a process, always changing, then what is it that you are trying to hold on to? What is it that you are trying to grasp at? Who is it that you are, you know, who is in you that tries to grasp at things with aversion attachment? There is nothing there to do that because it's changing all the time. So when I'm changing like that, and therefore there is nothing that I can, you know, at any moment say this is the one or this is the thing that is existing on its own, then what is it that I fear will be destroyed at death or at any time? Because it does not need to be destroyed, it's changing all the time. You know, if something that's changing all the time cannot be destroyed, because what is there to be destroyed? So why I'm afraid of something when there is nothing that in me which is existing on its own? When that is experienced, then what is there to be afraid of anything? What's there to crave for anything? And what is there to die? Because it's changing so much. There's nothing there to die, especially because that is another change. So when that experience happens, you understand emptiness. The nature of the understanding of emptiness is nothing more than that you really deeply see the impermanence of yourself. And therefore everybody or everything, not just in a long term changes, but momentarily changes. And changing is the way of life. Changing is life. If there is no change, there is no life. Living is changing. Living is a process of changes, because if it is not changing, you will be dead, no? There's nothing happening, change. If there's nothing changing, they can't be living, because living is something growing and something, is a process of change. So therefore, the reason that living is possible is because it is changing. So the living itself is a process of changes, lots of things. So the living life is, the dependently arising thing. Everything is dependent. There's something is causing some things, and that's causing some things, and that's causing some things, and that's, all these kind of, and it's, the life is a process of, causes and effects, or in another way, interrelatedness, dependently arising things. That's why, it's going forward. It's all, if that's not there, there can't be anything. Everything that we see around us, whatever it is, you look at myself, look at yourself, look at all the things around us, there's nothing which you can say, this is, totally independent, totally one, totally unchanging. There can't be anything. If it is so totally unchanging, then it cannot be affected by anything. It cannot affect anything. So it would be as good as not there. So therefore, the main kind of the reality of anything that's there, anything that's happening, anything that's created or growing or happening or a process of change, any chemistry that's happening is because its nature is change, because its nature is not existing on its own. If something is existing on its own, and it's then it cannot have any relationship with anything else. It cannot affect each other, because affecting each other is changing, replacing. And if things affect each other and it's changing, then it's a process. It's not static. It's not one. And so therefore, when it's not one, when it's not independent, then it's impermanent. It's a process. And if you look deeply, you can't find anything there which is existing completely. So therefore, its nature is emptiness. Its nature of emptiness means that doesn't mean that there is nothing there. There's no existence. But the way it exists is in this little bit like Like the river, for instance. When you look at the river, you say, this is a river. But what's river? It's lots of water. River is nothing more than lots of water, a flowing water. But this moment's flowing water is not the next moment's flowing water. As sometimes people say, you cannot cross the same river twice, because the water that you crossed this moment, nothing is left there next moment you come, even if you came back immediately. But is it the same river? Or is it a different river? You call it same river because it's flowing, the water is flowing in a kind of similar way in the same. But actually it's not. So the same is everything that we see around. Because we saw this something like that, with all the causes and conditions and all the interrelatedness and all the, something was there. So next moment you say, oh, I saw it yesterday, but actually it's the next, it's many generations after. Same is yourself. Who am I? Am I the same person that I was born? When I was born, I was just this much. I can't be same. It's not same. My body, nobody would recognize me when you look at me when I was born. Of course, they said that even that time I had a big ear. And then when you are, a kind of 8 years, 7 years, is it same? I think even science says that each 7 years, every cell of your body is totally, replaced. There's no one cell left. So it's not the same body. And mind, what's the mind? The thoughts momentarily changes, the emotion momentarily changes, the consciousness, this is one consciousness, next moment is another consciousness. Is it one? It cannot be one. It's changing all the time. There is a continuum, but it's not one. So therefore, what I was when I was born, what I am now, cannot be the same. Cannot be different. This is what we call the continuum. It's like the river. So this is the Buddhist way of understanding the life, and the life after life also is the same thing. Sometimes we talk about life after life. The life after life and the moments in this life is not so different from the Buddhist point of view. What I am now, these moments of me creates the next moments of me with all the, the physical, mental, emotional, the karmic, everything together forms the next moment. But if you say, is this exactly the same as the next? Or is this exactly the same as the before? No. That's why, they give these five examples. How the change happens. The first example, according to the Abhidhamma Kosha, it says that it's like the yogurt and the milk and yogurt. How does milk become yogurt? Milk is the past life and the yogurt is the next life. And when there is milk, there is no yogurt. When there is yogurt, there is the milk. But without milk, there is no yogurt. But yogurt is not milk. So when milk is there, where is yogurt? When yogurt is there, where is the milk gone? Yeah? How did milk become yogurt? So the same thing, my past, and my present, or my present and my future, whether it's moment by moment, whether it's year after year, or whether it's life after life, it's the same way. You can't say it's exactly the same, but you can't say it's totally different also. So therefore, the five examples are given. One is the milk and yogurt. Another is the lamp, transforming, if you candle, the first flame of the candle and the last flame of the candle, is it same or the different? And then the seal, if you put a seal and you say this is the seal of the king, but the seal is this one. But when you put the seal on here, is it, what is this? This is not the same seal, it's but it is not different also, and the mirror, when I look into my mirror, what do I see in the mirror? Is it me? Is it my face? It's my face, of course, but is it really my face? How did my face go into that mirror? They cannot be the reflection without my face, but my face is not in that mirror. So this is, so these are the examples. Did I miss anything? I think I missed. What? No, this is not one of these examples. Fifth. Another is this thing. If I say something, if I say Buddham Saranam Gacchami, and then it gets into his mind, and he says Buddham Saranam Gacchami, how did it get to him? So therefore, this is called interdependence. Dependently arising, and it's not concrete, it's not existing on its own, it's like magic, and that's how the world is, that's how I am, that's how everything is. Because we don't see it like that, we don't see the impermanent nature of things, interdependent nature of things, or dependently arising nature of things. We don't see the emptiness nature of things, and therefore we react with aversion, we react with attachment, we react as a dualistic thing, and therefore we create the samsara, samsaric way of reacting. Once we understand what we are, what is there for us, what I actually am, what actually everything is, the way things exist. It's not to say that things don't exist. Things exist, but they exist in this special way, in a way that is very difficult to describe and very difficult to say. It doesn't have existing on its own, but it is not non-existent. So that understanding is sometimes called emptiness, sometimes called interdependence, sometimes called impermanence. But it is so important to understand that, because we think that what happened to me, when I was young, is happened to me. This is me. It's happened to me. Something, and then I feel. But then when you look deeply, that's already gone, that's another me. Long time happened and finished, and there's no need for me to hold on to those things that happened to me. There's nothing, I cannot hold on to them, even if I want to. If you had kind of, it's like the water in the, this kind of this water that's flowing in the river. If it tries to hold on to the bank, you know, if I'm kind of a piece of, you know, I don't know, a kind of drop of water, and then I'm flowing within that river, and then I see a beautiful tree, and then I say that, oh, I don't want to let go of this tree, I want to hold on to this bank. Can I do that? I cannot do it, because it's not possible, because the nature of the, you know, water is flowing. And then I say, oh, my God, oh, you know, you are bound to be, you know, in trouble. You are bound to have suffering and problem and pain, because you are trying to do something that you cannot do, because that's not your nature. And that's the problem with the samsara. That's the problem with our kind of samsaric state of mind, is that we try to do things which is not possible to do. You know, we cannot hold on to things. We cannot, you know, we cannot run away from things, the changes especially, you know. We want to run away from changes. We cannot run away from changes, you know. We want to hold on to things that happened in the past, or something that we had before. We cannot do that, because that's not the way we are. The moment we understand this, the moment we really deeply experience this, then only we can have peace, because we cease to try to do something that is not possible to do. So therefore, you know, when people are talking about don't be attached, don't have aversion, it's not giving a hard kind of a command that you are not allowed to do this. You know, if you do this, then somebody up there will punish you. It's not about that. It's just trying to understand a fact of life. You know, there is no question of allowed or not allowed. You know, just the understanding is that if we are trying to do something that is impossible to do, then it will only give you pain and problem and trouble. And do you want to have this continuous trouble or not? You know? And we don't want continuous have trouble. So therefore, then we need to look and say, what is it that my nature is? What is it that everything is? How is everything? So the more we understand that, then it's not a question of I should get attached or I should get aversion or not. It's that there's no point. There's no. It's not possible. And if we understand that deeply, it doesn't mean that I will not enjoy my life. I will enjoy my life immensely. Because actually, that way of, you know, reacting with aversion attachment is what, you know, what prevents me from actually enjoying my life. So therefore, you know, this understanding to get deep into ourselves, you know, that is what we call wisdom, because to see the things clearly. And Ram said that I should say something about how to meditate on it. I think the first thing, most important thing, how to meditate on it is impermanence. Because impermanence is, as we said before, is very obvious. Everything changes. What doesn't change? You know, the world changes. The universe changes. You know. The human beings changes, you know, everything changes, and changes all the time, so keep on changing, and so therefore it's a fact, and we reflect, we think about what changes have taken place in our life, what changes have taken place in others' lives, what changes have taken place in the world. You know, the changes taking place every moment. So therefore, to really allow that to happen and to understand that everything is momentary. Everything is momentary. And these emotions are completely changing all the time. This moment I'm feeling good, this next moment I'm feeling something unhappy, you know, unpleasant, or you know, some emotion comes, and next moment another emotion comes, and this, and one thought is coming, and next moment another thought is coming. So it's always changing, whether you like it or you don't like it. And so therefore, you know, the more you understand it, the more your big mind becomes kind of more spacious. Because if I have a, you know, negative emotion now, if I'm sad now, if I know that it's impermanent, then I don't have to be so upset by it, you know. If I'm sad now, so what? Next moment I'll be not so sad. You know? It's a little bit like this story of this Irish farmer. One visitor in Ireland, he got up in the morning and then he put on his clothes and raincoat and then went out for a walk. And there he saw a shepherd, you know, looking after the sheep. You know, Ireland is very green, you know, the most green country in the whole world. It's England is green, but Irish green is slightly different from the English green. And then he asked this farmer, you know, the shepherd, what kind of weather you think it will be? He said, well, it will be as I like. You know, and then he went and it rained and rained and rained the whole day. And then he came back and he said, hey, look, you're wrong, it rained the whole day. He said, but that's what I like. So if you don't mind the change, if you don't mind what's happening, it doesn't, you know, it's okay. And actually in Ireland, they say that the change, you know, if you feel that the weather is going to be good, you just wait for 2 minutes. And if you think that it'll be bad, you wait another 2 minutes. So if it is like that, then so, you know, it's like that. No? It's everything is changing anyway. So what is such a big deal that if some emotion is happening or something is happening? So this is also very important thing that, you know, I think we talked about this before also. But it's not about, you know, when we talk about working on our emotions from Buddhist point of view, it's not just like, oh, I do away with my anger, I do away and I never get angry. It's not like that, you know. Maybe it wouldn't happen, I don't know, maybe Buddhas don't get angry, I don't know, but you know, it's not so easy not to get angry at all. If somebody says that I don't get angry anymore, then you have to be a little bit suspicious. You know, it happened with there's a story. Once a monk was doing some, you know, retreat, and then he came and he met his famous Tibetan master called Pato Rinpoche. He came to his camp, and then Pato Rinpoche says, "What you have been doing?" "I've been meditating on, you know, compassion and, you know, loving kindness, and now I've done away with anger. I don't get angry at all." And then he thought, well, you know, let me see if he really does get angry at all. So he wanted to kind of test him. So he, after he left, he told some of his people, you know, this new monk who came here, he says that, you know, he doesn't get angry anymore, but actually his hands are not very clean. He steals things. So it went like wildfire in the whole. this new monk, you know, be careful, he's not very good in his clean his hands. So, and then at the end, he himself heard this, you know. So he was really shocked, because he never did, you know. He was a good monk, and he never stole anything. So he said, who is spreading this totally, you know, malicious and baseless rumor against me? And then, without much difficulty, he found out that it was the High Lama who was doing this. He really got angry and upset, and he rushed into his tent and, you know, banged the whatever was there on in front of him, and he said, "What do you mean that I'm stealing things? I never stole anything. I'm maybe not really the greatest monk, but, you know, I'm at least not a thief." He was really angry. Then he was laughing and said, "I thought you had done away with your anger. What is this?" So therefore, you know, it's not about completely doing away with. I mean, if you can do it, that's okay. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do it, but it's about not be so afraid of that, you know. That you, if you know that you can control it, you know, you can let go. You know, if it comes, it's not a big deal. Then that's I think the important thing, you know. Whatever negative emotion comes, we know that it comes, but it is okay, I can deal with it, I don't need to become a slave of it. Because it everything comes, but it goes also, and so therefore I don't need, you know, to be so afraid and so bothered and so, you know, because sometimes that makes it is worse, you know. I should not get angry, you know, and then, you know, you also get angry, but, you know, it's kind of too much, you know. Then when am I going to get rid of my anger, you know. So this is not necessarily the best way of working with it. So therefore, you know, meditating on, contemplating, and it's not kind of meditation of impermanence. It's not necessarily only kind of sitting and then just thinking about impermanence. It's more an attitude, you know, more an understanding, more a mindfulness. The things change, everybody changes, everything changes, you know, every moment changes. So therefore, my past is gone, you know. So of course, there's lots of impact of my past. That doesn't mean that everything changes, doesn't mean that the past has no impact on me. The past has left an impact on me. The present is leaving an impact on you. Your future will be according to your present and the past. But the past is gone. You know? Something happened to me a long time before, and that's why you don't have to, you know. It's no use, it's no need. But its impact can be there. So therefore, you know, if I understand this, then I can also let it go and let it, you know, take it lightly. And, you know, the more I can let go, the more I can be, you know, not too much with grasping, but, you know, allowing to change and then relax. That's the meditation. Meditation is, in this kind of sense, is more like an understanding, a clear understanding. And of course, that clear understanding needs to be reminded, you know. So reminding yourself of this. And so therefore, you know, to act accordingly, to act with the understanding, because we are usually acting as if, even if we intellectually understand that we are living only at the most 100 years, but in our action, the way we do as if we are actually living at least 1,000 years, you know, that how how, you know, like if I'm now, you know, almost 60, I can't live more than, you know, at the most 40 years, or not even 40. But then I act as if I'm going to live another 100 years. Why? Totally ignorance. You know? So therefore, you know, when I know this, then I know that there's nothing much, there's no use to much kind of grasping at things and craving for things and things like that. So therefore, you know, this understanding and this experience is something that we need to, you know, it's just being realistic. It's almost nothing actually to do with being Buddhist also. It's common sense. Most of the things in Buddhism is actually common sense. You don't try to see it from a Buddhist point of view. We want to try to see it from the truth point of view. That's why, you know, sometimes people say that, you know, Buddhism is very close to science. Because, you know, what we try to do is try to see what is the fact, what is the truth, what is the reality. Not that this is what Buddhist point of view is, so therefore I must hold it even if I know it's not right. There's nothing like that. You know? If it is really not right, then from the Buddhist point of view, you have to, it's no point, you know, holding on to that. So therefore, this is the understanding. And I don't know, I think maybe I shouldn't keep on talking just myself. If you have questions on things that I've said or on things that I haven't said, you are most welcome. The connection with impermanence and emptiness is that if the, you know, if you understand impermanence at this, you know, kind of more subtle level or more deeper level, I think emptiness is nothing more than that. Okay. Emptiness means that there is nothing which is existing on its own. There is nothing. You can look at anything. You know, there is nothing which exists on its own. So therefore, if everything is changing, that we know everything is changing. But most of us don't know how quickly they are changing. Yeah? But if you go deeply, then we know that it's changing, things are changing every moment, because there is no one time, now it's changing, you know, there's a kind of 6 o'clock gong and then it's changing, or, you know, sometimes we feel that, oh, now it's my birthday, so now I'm going to be from this year to next year, you know, I'm now going to be at the 50th birthday, that's really important birthday, so now I'm going to change, you know, tomorrow. Today I'm not yet this, you know, today I'm not yet 50, tomorrow I'm going to be 50. It's not, you know, it's not like that, no? In real life, it's not that this only changing. I mean, I'm changing all the time. No? When is it that I'm not changing? It's no time. So therefore, you know, this fact that things are changing every time and every moment, and there's no moment which is not changing, is shows that there is no existing on its own, you know. So that is emptiness. This emptiness is not something else. It's that there is no, everything is dependently there. When you say dependently there, because sometimes interdependence, we call interdependence also, pratitya samanupata. But interdependence, I think, sometimes gives a little bit wrong meaning. Because you see interdependent, so that this is dependent on this, so these two are interdependent. So it's kind of, you know, interdependent, this and this. It's not talking about that. It's not talking about everything is connected with each other, like a network. It's not talking about that interdependence. Interdependence is talking about, you look at anything, and that anything is made of many things. It's not independent thing, but it's a dependent thing. Its existence is dependent on many things. Understand what I'm saying? Because, you know, this is one thing. But this is, you know, this is not, you know, this is not just, you know, totally separate thing, and there's nothing connected with everything. It's not like that. This depends on so many other things. Like we human beings, you know, I think that I am, you know, I'm myself. I don't need to depend on anything else. I exist on my own. This is me. I'm independent. But am I really independent? Just one example, the air that is around here. If there is no air, no oxygen, then will I survive? How long will I survive? Yeah? So therefore, I'm very much dependent on the air. I'm very much dependent on the food. I'm very much dependent on everything. On, you know, if a little thing changes, maybe I will die. So therefore, I'm not independent thing, I'm a totally dependent thing. So in the same way, everything in the whole universe is independent thing. So therefore, there is nothing which is totally independent. And that's the understanding of emptiness. Emptiness and interdependent are same and one. Emptiness is not like space. It's nothing. It's not like that. Emptiness is the philosophy of things. Everything is dependent. You know, everything that you look at is a relative thing. It's a dependent thing. It's something that is made of lots of things and many causes and conditions. That's so. Therefore, when you understand impermanence, you understand this. That's the connection. And then about the death. Yeah, I mean, you are certain to die, but you are, you know, uncertain when it happens. Yeah? So, it's not that, you know, I will die. I'm certain about it. That's not, you know, the meditation was that I can die any time. That death is, actually death is there every moment in a way. Because every moment there is a change. And the change is a death. Death is the name for a big change. So therefore every moment is a small change. You know, every day actually you go to sleep and then you get up. It's a little bit like dying, and some even say that when you go to sleep, you know, in the evening you are shorter, and then when you get up in the morning you are a little bit longer, taller. Yeah? So your body has also changed. You know, so therefore every day, every moment is like, you know, it's a change, like a death. So therefore, you know, there is no kind of the death is so unreliable. Reliable in the sense that it will happen surely, but that, you know, But it is uncertain. Any time can happen. It's, and sometimes we have this illusion that the death will happen, but only when I'm very old. So I have lots of time to prepare for it. Yeah? Lots of time. You know, so it will only one day happen, maybe long, long time. Oh, it's so far away. And then we do all sorts of crazy things. And then it's there. It's a little bit like this story. There was one, it's a story. I don't know if there is any truth in this story, but the message says something good. There was a monastery, and there was a monk, and he had a friend who was a spirit called Therang in Tibetan. And then I don't know whether you know about Therang. I'll tell you what Therang is. I don't know whether you have these Therangs in Thailand. If you don't have, then you can get some imported from internet. It's supposed to be very hairy thing, only one leg, and it is very happy, very addicted to playing, this dice. But it's a spirit, so it can bring things for you. So you can make friend with one. To make friend, this is the story. You have to go to a place where there are three rivers meeting, and then you have to play dice on your own and say that, yeah, Therang has lost, I have won. Therang has lost, I have won. Therang has lost, I have won. And then after some time, Therang cannot, tolerate this. So he takes out his hand and say, no, I'm not lost, let me play. And it will be a very hairy kind of hand, small hairy hand. So you have to grab it and don't let it go. And says, unless you become my, friend, I will not let you go. And then it has to give you word that I am your friend, because it's a spirit, so it will not deceive you. So once you get a friend, then you get always a friend. Anyway, that's another story. So now this monk had this Therang friend. So whatever he needed, he used to ask him and he'll bring it, food and drink, whatever. So he was very happy. And then he told this, you are a spirit, you know when people die. He says, yes, we know a little bit more or less when he's dying. And then he said that, well, when I'm nearing death, a little bit ahead, you must remind me so that I really practice Dharma, So you must warn me. Okay, he said. And then he passed on. The time passed very quickly as usual, And then one day he came and said, oh, your hair is growing, gray. He says, that's not the news. I mean, I've been slowly having gray hairs for a long time. I mean, what's so special about it? And he says, yeah, but do you know that? You know about it? Yes, of course I know about it. Okay, then. So he left. And then after a few years again, he came in. Oh, you've lost a teeth. You have lost some teeth. He says, what is the big deal? I said, well, of course I'm getting old. I'm losing teeth. Oh, you know about it. Of course I know about it. Okay, then. He left. And then one day he came and said, oh, you're going to die tomorrow. I said, what? You're going to die tomorrow. But I told you to warn me. He said, but I warned you. I said, you're getting, gray hair. You say you knew about it. I told you that you're losing your teeth. You say you knew about it. So what more can I do? So it's a little like that, We kind of, think that we are going to die one day, but, not for a long time. But if we really remind ourselves that it could be any time, we need to be like prepared to die now. Am I really prepared to die at this moment tonight? What is the real important thing for me? That if that happens, is it okay for me or not? When when I'm really certain that this is okay, even if I die tonight, it's okay. Then I'm a little bit prepared, you know. That's the idea.
Rinpoche, since everything in the universe is impermanent, so how about the Nirvana, Buddhahood, Buddha nature? Is it a state of permanent or impermanent?
You know, this the state of Nirvana or Buddhahood is not a thing. Yeah? It's an understanding. Now everything is impermanent, and we don't understand it's impermanent. Everything is emptiness, but we don't understand it's impermanent. That's when we are in samsara. When we understand it's permanent, there is nothing called nirvana there. You know, that knowing the truth is called nirvana, and not knowing the truth, the situation, is called samsara. It's not a thing. When it's not a thing, then you can not say this is permanent or impermanent. Understand what I'm saying?
How about the pure land or the Buddha land? Then, in that sense, then Buddha land must be in a sense of impermanence, you know?
Yeah, I mean, because Buddha land is the experience of a pure mind. When your mind becomes pure, and you kind of see things clearly, and then everything is pure. And pure and impure is not, when you talk about that level, the pure and impure is not like clean and dirty. Pure is, you know, it's seen like this. If you see the true nature of, you know, things, everything is, you know, because everything is impermanent, everything is, you know, emptiness, everything is appearance and emptiness, you know, everything is emptiness and appearance. If you see like that deeply, then everything you see is pure. Because everything you see doesn't give you any trouble. Everything is beautiful, everything is nice, everything is, even if it is permanent or impermanent, doesn't matter, you know. So when that experience comes, then you have a pure vision, you know. So the pure vision can happen even now. You don't have to die and go somewhere else. Yeah? So that's the pure vision, pure land, pure. So therefore, when that kind of pure, you know, Buddha field or happens, then it's impermanent. Maybe it's even not there on its own. It's emptiness. You know, everything is emptiness anyway. There's nothing exists on its own. So there's, you know, the question of permanent and impermanent is even a concept. It's not even. Even a fact, you know, because everything is actually not even existing on its own. So when things don't exist on its own, you cannot say it's permanent or impermanent, But our way of seeing things, you know, wrong way of seeing things, you know. First, we see things, everything very much there, very permanent. That wrong way of seeing, to change that, so we say impermanence. And then we are a little bit closer to seeing things clearly, you know. But then when you see more deeply of impermanence, you know, then you see the emptiness. And when you see emptiness, there's no question of impermanence. It's not about how long that it exists. It's the existence is not there, isn't it? So that's why, you know, the pure realm is, in one way then it's there's nothing kind of, what can you say? When you see its nature, then it doesn't kind of give any botheration to you. It doesn't harm you. It doesn't bring any, you know, suffering or pain or anything like that, whether things there or whether things doesn't appear. So therefore, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's permanent or impermanent or anything, or emptiness or not emptiness. It's just, so therefore, when you understand that deeply, then, you know, everything is okay. Everything is pure. Pure here is not like nice, clean, you know, beautiful. You know, it can be nice, clean, beautiful, also the same way. It is ugly, you know, strange, not so beautiful, exactly the same way. So therefore, the pure can be anything, it doesn't matter.
Then can we put it this way, like the Vajra Sutra says, actually, samsara and nirvana is one and the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, one point having two sides. Or even permanent or impermanent is one and the same thing. It depends on how you can penetrate the truth.
That's right. That's right. Because samsara is this, you know, in a way there is a samsara, because when you don't see things clearly, then you have all these problems and suffering. But when you see things clearly, then you don't need to suffer. And so therefore, you know, there is a big difference between samsara and nirvana. But actually, nothing changes. You know, samsara is not something that's lots of things there. And then nirvana is everything is finished, and it's just the experience, your own way of seeing the same thing in a clear way and direct way and complete way or not. You know, whether you see things in the right way or not. So therefore, you know, nirvana doesn't become something totally different, you know. I mean, it's different. Experientially, it's very different, but, you know, it's not that there is this is nirvana, and now I go to the nirvana, you know, that kind of island, and now this is samsara, this is nothing like that, no.
I hear a lot about what we don't take with us. We don't take the car, we don't take the mobile phone, we don't take this knowledge we might have while we see out here. I mean, we see stars, we see square buildings, we see Euclidean space. We could become bodhisattvas and delay complete enlightenment to another life. What do you suggest is what we should concentrate on in this life that we will take with us?
Because the way I experience myself, I think that is what matters, you know. Not the intellectual knowledge, or, you know, of course the positions and things like that you cannot take, but even the mentally, you know, the knowledge part of it, but the experience, the how I react, how I am, you know, how I experience myself. That, I think, is the most important thing, because from Buddhist point of view, that's what happens to me. Yeah. Now, what kind of person I will become tomorrow? Doesn't matter too much what I know about things or what I have with me or don't have with me, but how I experience myself, you know, what my kind of personality, you can call if you like, you know, how I'm naturally reacting with things. So that is what continues. So this is supposed to be the way.
How do you react?
How I react? How I, you know, experience myself? How I, if I'm more peaceful, am I more compassionate? Am I more, you know, kind of, what can you say? Know how to deal with my own emotions, yeah, or not? You know, when you do sitting, I mean, this is one thing I have to say, is that when we sitting meditation, then it becomes empty. It's not like that. Emptiness is whether you are sitting or not sitting, you know, all the time, the way things are is the same thing. You know, it's interdependent, it's impermanent, it's dependently arising, and therefore it is emptiness. That's the way it is, you know, that's, so that understanding is there. It's not that when you sit then it disappears, that's not kind of thing. But, I mean, when we are sitting meditation, doing meditation, of course there are slightly different meditations, Samatha meditation, Vipassana meditation and things like that. But meditation is mainly, you know, working on, you know, what can you say? It's a way to acquaint yourself with certain understanding, yeah? Say like if we know that too much, you know, disturbed state of mind is no good. We know that too much negative emotion is not good. We know that if we, you know, only kind of allow ourselves to have painful, problematic, you know, concentrate only on problem things is not so good. So we meditate and we allow our mind to be in peace, you know, let things be, you know, all the thoughts, emotions and, you know, can allow to come and allow to go. So therefore we are exercising. Meditation is an exercise, it's a training to let our mind be more flexible. Now this is necessary so that we can allow things to go in our actual daily life also. So like for instance, you have meditated and in your meditation a thought comes, you allow it to go. Emotion comes, you allow it to go. You know, a problem comes up of your yesterday's, you know, experience of work. you let it allow to go, you know? And then something happens that bothers you or worries you, you allow to go, you know? And then you feel peace, you feel, you know, just the present moment, breathing exercise now, here, at this very moment. Learn to be in this very present moment, not to be in the past, not to be in the future, but be in the present moment. Yeah? That's meditation, no? Now in the day-to-day life also, we try to be in the present moment. Because in the day-to-day life, in our work, you know, we think about the past and, you know, feel very bad about something. We feel about the future and worry about a lot. And then we don't do any work, we just worry, worry, worry. Yeah? Sometimes, you know, it happens that it takes more time to worry than actually do, you know. Actually, it's the hardest thing in doing things is not about doing things, but thinking about doing things, no? So therefore, we waste lots of time and also lots of energy and totally uselessly, you know, kind of. So therefore, let us say that, okay, what we have to do now, what is the most important thing at this moment to do, you know? Not getting angry and upset and worrying, but doing what I need to do, because worrying doesn't change anything. The worrying doesn't, you know, correct any mistakes. So therefore, if I say this I do, and then if somebody is not, you know, doing something that upsets you, of course it upsets you, but then will it help that I'm upset? Will it help that I'm criticizing somebody? Will it help that I'm shouting at somebody? Will it help that I'm angry to get things done? Yeah? It's not talking about emptiness, not talking about, you know, kind of spiritual thing, but in the real kind of work, you know, in the actual work of the day, in the business of the day, does it help or not? You know that it doesn't help, you know. Even if you shout, even if you are angry, even if you are worried, even if you are upset, that doesn't make things better. So therefore, to understand this and say, okay, now what the main thing is to make things better. So instead of, you know, wasting our energy and our emotions on being, you know, feeling bad about things, if we can concentrate our energy on how to make it better, I think this is important. This is very, very important in dealing with our, and that is, I think, that goes together with the Dharma, because everything changes anyway, and I can, you know, I can try my best to. It doesn't mean that everything works in the perfect way all the time. This we need to know right from the beginning, you know. Right in the beginning we know that everything is impermanent, so everything going right doesn't mean that everything goes right all the time. Everything goes wrong, it's not that everything goes wrong all the time, things change. And what I have to do, and then also I have to accept also things, sometimes things work better, sometimes things work worse, and everybody is not the same, you know, and things like that. So you have to have a, and if even a big thing happens that's not so nice, you know, you have to be prepared, because then when you are prepared, then it's okay, you know. And everything has a good side and bad side. The other day somebody came after the talk and said, oh, you know, how can I had a little accident, you know. I crashed my car a little bit and I feel very bad. What can I do? What can I, how can I tried to meditate, but you know, it's still, you know, what can I do? I said, you see like this, that, you know, at least your crash was not, you know, you didn't kill anybody, you know, you didn't break your leg or any limbs, so you are very lucky, you had a lucky, you know, a car crash, you know. So it could have been much worse. If you can think like that, it's a little better, no? It's not good, that of course, you shouldn't have it. Maybe you should be more careful in the future, but, you know, you should also think like that. So, I think everything is incomparative, no? So therefore, I mean, in the daily life, you can use the Dharma teachings in the mind as also, but I think you can also use, you know, common sense into this, and then, you know, use it in only not that, you know, you impose the Dharma on things. I think this is very important. Or from Dharma point of view, it's like this, so I must think like this. But actually, the business point of view, this is not good. That's not, I think, the way, you know. You should do good business at the same time, you know, have less problem.
Take a breath.
Okay. Now, no more emptiness.
Yeah, I think it's So, would you think I would change
I'm not going to be able to do that. Thank you. Thank you. No. So, Thank you. I remember. So was that all clear for me now?
Yeah. It's the work, is that the thing? Yeah. You can come to many thoughts. Actually, thoughts are good because it's part of the realizing it, but then to apply it. And then to catch yourself. I always catch myself a little bit after the talk.
Well, as you practice more and more,
it's very difficult.
You know, I find the best thing, especially because I've been in Taiwan so long, is don't say anything. You know, when you're having this mind state,
they all look old because
they heard the truth. But you really always going to say the wrong thing. If you're angry, I'm gonna be wrong, you know. That's my idea, because I tend to get a little bit angry and then it goes away. So if you say something rude,
yeah.
Yes, I'm saying by moon talk to it. And he said, you talk a lot, you say a lot, you can lose a lot.
Yeah,
you say a little, you can lose a little.
You say
nothing,
the word that comes out of your mouth, it looks for horses that can pull it back in.
Yeah, that's right.
Bad.
I want to take some more drinks. You don't have any ice.
I can do that for you.
That's okay. I think it's passion friendly. Perfect. It's passion friendly. And if you see my bag, grab it and bring it over.
I like the talk also that it brings it back to like your experience, because people start to think like that Golden Land is like a destination you can go to, really. I think we either make too many concepts.
Yeah.
Or turn to reality experience.
Yeah. Well, as I say, the key is just to make the good action. Sorry, thank you. Hey, well, hand me one of those pink envelopes while you're here. Oh, okay, I got it. Okay. I'm good. Are you ready for your quiz?
For what?
Your quiz?
My quiz?
Your quiz on that material I gave you last time? The reading material?
You told me
I haven't read it.
You haven't read it yet.
It's in my case. Oh,
you know, maybe you were one of my students in your previous life, obviously.
Last time they used it, then you gave me a whole night to read it.
Yeah. That's all right. Did you ever read favorite quotes from the book you gave me? I mean, that's, if you didn't give me that book, I never would have made that book.
That's the easiest reading I've got, too. Oh, okay. Thank you. I heard you while you're up. Why don't you share in the American footage in his bowl there, so we can share that and think about how good it is to give him a donation. That's right, I'm just joking. That's all right, I'm just joking. So I got more, but I don't need to give you something.
Do you need to get some?